You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
I saw the face of the mummy last night. I fell in love with this hideous sight. How could it happen? How could it be? It's just me and my mummy. My mummy and me. It happened in Egypt, by the old River Nile, where at the base of a pyramid, she gave me a smile. Go, her bandage unraveled, decayed flesh I did see. Now it's me and my mummy and me. Flesh like clay in her tomb, she did lay for thousands and thousands of years. Wherever I came, one day found her rotting away, and dried all her clay-like tears. Wherever we married in Cairo, the very next day. Now outside our crypt, the inscription does say, here lie two mummies, wrapped close as can be. It's just me and my mummy, my mummy and me. My lover said, she's my mummy now. I can't live without her. She has me all tangled up. She's me and
hello,
my mummy.
And David's very keen to get to sing today. Hello and welcome to the Stone Tapes. I'm Sam Stone, and joining us on the telephone is Patricia H. Ash. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Hi. And in the studio, David J. Howe.
Hello, Mummy.
Also in the studio, our producer Alex Lefchuk, who has a microphone this time.
Hello.
And shortly joining us will be Robin Pierce and Joshua Lou Friedman. Unfortunately, we won't be having any George Mann this week. George has got other commitments.
Yes.
We're missing him already.
Outrageous. How could you have other commitments? But never mind. We missed you, George.
The theme, it might already be obvious.
It's Me and My Mummy.
Yes, Me and My Mummy by Bobby Boris, Pickett and the Crypt Kickers, that's
Crypt
called.
Crypt Kickers, yes.
But the whole theme of the show today is about mummies and the...
Egyptian-style
mummies. Egyptian-style, yes, not just mummies and daddies.
Mummies. Egyptian-style mummies.
Patricia, with that in mind, are you reviewing anything like that? It doesn't matter if
and
you're
are
not.
Are you wrapped in bandages today?
Unfortunately not. I looked all over my bookshelves, I looked all over my Netflix, and I couldn't find anything with mummies in it, which made me sad.
Okay.
Aw, that's fine. So what would you be reviewing this time?
I wanted to review Bright.
Oh.
It's a Netflix original movie. The Ooh. One with the elves and the orcs and Will Smith.
Yes. We actually watched that last week.
Good.
Yes, we did.
I loved it. Oh. I loved it so much.
So can you give us a little bit of a rundown about the story of Bright?
Right. So half of this rundown is going to be the world, and the rest of it is going to be the story, because the world is really deep and rich, and I really want to know more about it. So there's elves, they're like super rich people, and they're in charge of everything, basically. There's humans, they're kind of in the middle, and then there are the orcs, and they're at the very bottom. Nobody likes them, they're supposed to be stupid, and all of those terrible stereotypes, because they picked the wrong side in a war several thousand years ago. And they're still getting stereotyped and stuff because of that. And gosh, it was really interesting. So the plot is Will Smith and the first orc cop. They're both cops. And it's sort of a buddy cop movie.
Right.
Well, drama. I mean, there's some funny things, but it's mostly shooting. There's a lot of shooting. So Will Smith, whose character's name is Daryl, but I'm just going to call him Will Smith because I didn't really remember what his name was. And Joel Edgerton is the orc cop, and his character's name is Nick. And so Nick and Will Smith stumble upon, they're beat cops. They stumble upon this big, giant thing, this big, giant conspiracy, basically. And they come into possession, sort of a magic wand and a mysterious elf. And basically, like what they said in the movie about a magic wand is that it's a nuclear weapon that grants wishes. And absolutely everyone wants this.
Right.
So that's why there's a lot of shooting in this movie. Mm. Because everybody tries to take the wand from them too and the elf. So there's street gangs who want this wand. There are corrupt cops who want this wand. And there's also this elvish apocalypse cult that had the wand and wants it back. Mm. Man, the elves in this movie are so terrifying.
They are.
Absolutely terrifying. I've never been so scared of an elf.
It's a very fast-moving film, isn't it, Patricia?
Yeah, most of it is chases, and 'cause they're being chased from one location to another location. And they're trying to figure out what's going on as the audience is trying to figure out what's going on. And it seems like they're in the middle of some kind of prophecy.
Mm.
And they're really interesting because they're just ordinary people.
That's right.
Well, an ordinary orc. Mm.
I think that's how it works. Why it works so well, it's because you're actually plummeted into the universe of the world, and you're expected to go along with it. And there's not really any explanations, which is brilliant. That's to me, that's some of the best dramas done that way.
And I can say a few words about the visual look of the film as well. I mean, there's a lovely moment in it. It's fairly near the beginning, I think. Where Will Smith and Nick kind of are investigating this underground basement thing or something, because there's been a fight to try and gain the wand and stuff there. And they come into this room, and then, like, one wall seems to be kind of like a body embedded in the wall with all these sort of shining beams of light and stuff coming out of it, and it's all kind of fluorescing on the wall. And this is one of the elves who got in the way of the wand that's kind of been transformed into this kind of still half alive thing,
and it's absolutely beautiful.
It's
as well
mind bending, really.
It's beautiful though. It's almost like a painting that's alive.
Gorgeous.
It's like a living painting on the wall.
I mean, from the very first second of this movie, you just, I mean, the opening credits are over a bunch of like various graffitis, like orcs are bad.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
Faction, and here's that faction, and it really gives you a really good picture of the world even before anybody shows up.
Mm. I mean, it's an exploration of racism again, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, but just done obviously in a fantasy setting.
Sam mentioned the film They Live.
Oh, yes, They Live. Was it They Live? That I remember. Yeah, very similar.
Similar, with people not being quite who they seem and all that kind of thing. So what mark out of 10 would you give this one, Patricia?
10 out of 10. Absolutely.
Wow. So that's bright.
Wow, that is really good.
I really loved it, and I heard a rumour that they're going to make a sequel.
Oh, okay.
And I really
that's
can't
good.
Wait for that. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, it must have been received well.
So stay on the line, Patricia, because we're now going to have a little round of In This Month. And we've got a nice little bit of music. So Patricia, when do you think, in what year, do you think the first traveller's cheques went on sale in London? They could be used in 90 European cities. When do you think that was?
I'm going to say in the 1700-something.
You're not far off.
Yeah.
You're not far off. I was quite amazed. It's 1772. That's 246 years ago.
Wow, I can't even imagine that.
The traveller's cheques first went on sale.
Wow.
That blew my mind.
And we weren't in Europe then.
No, we weren't. Well, we kind of were. England hasn't moved.
Yes, but you know what I mean.
Hasn't changed its
position.
We weren't
part of the European Union.
That amazed me. So my next little factoid, you drive, Alex. When do you think safety glass was introduced in car windscreens? You don't have to give the right answer.
I've already seen the actual response.
Oh, you've seen the answer.
So it would be unfair. I declare my interest.
Unfair. Sam?
Well,
if you didn't know...
I didn't know. No.
It's 81 years ago.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
I thought that was it. 1937, January 1937, that safety glass first was used in car windscreens.
Mm.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was just strange because you think technology, because it is a form of technology, yes, like that would be something a bit more modern. But then glass has been around a long time, hasn't
it? Well, something a bit more modern then. Patricia, when was the first British mobile phone call made?
No idea.
Would you believe 1985?
Yes, really? I would believe 1985.
33 years ago. It was made by Ernie Wise.
Oh, wow.
Off of Morecambe and Wise to Vodafone. 1985. But we take mobiles so much for granted.
We do.
And yet, really, they're only 33 years old.
I do remember, actually, I probably could have guessed that one, because I do remember them being, coming out in the 80s, and they were basically, you had a massive, it was almost a big battery thing you had to carry around with them.
Battery-powered
thing. And the thing itself was
right.
Like a brick.
Yes.
So it's quite amazing that we've got these very slimline little bits of nothing
here's,
now.
Here's another one for you. The London Underground map. You know the London Underground map, everyone?
Yes,
so
yes.
That was introduced when? January... What year?
The modern London, version of
modern,
it? Or...
The modern London Underground map designed by Harry Beck.
Hmm.
Well.
1933.
Whoa.
That's...
85 hard. Years ago.
And it hasn't changed.
Well, it's had... things added to it, stations added to it, but fundamentally, no, it hasn't changed. Extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. Here's a film one. British Board of Film Censors receives the authority to classify and censor films. And that happened in...
Wow.
1913. 105 years ago.
Cheese. That's what they first censored.
Cheese.
Because they were brought into operation because originally the cheesemakers of Britain were very concerned about their cheese being viewed as an odd off-light. So they had the censors to actually talk about that. The first movie that was ever censored was about cheese decomposing.
Really?
Really?
Oh, my word.
It's a snippet which probably even the most avid Stone taper wouldn't have been expecting.
I would never have known.
What's interesting is, I mean, does anyone know off the top of the head how long we've had movies? I can't remember. You might know that one, Alex.
It was George Melies.
William Freeze Green before then, and the late 19th century.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So that's hard to imagine that, you know, we've had moving pictures that long, really, isn't it?
So my next one is... when the BBC broadcast the first episode of Zed Cars. Who remembers Zed Cars? It was 56 years ago.
I obviously wasn't around to see it, but I know it. And I know the music, and I don't
know
how.
January 1962. It's fantastic. Now, we were talking about the London Underground there with the map in 1933. But in January of another year, the London Underground actually first opened between Paddington and Farringdon. So what year, Patricia, do you think the London Underground started? If they had a map in 1933...
Well, I think it was in the 1800s,
the
for sure.
The late 1800s.
It was 1863.
Wow.
So it's kind of mid-18.
Earlier than I thought.
So 1863. So this is where you get the things like, is it Oscar Wilde could have travelled on the Underground?
Oh, yes, of course, Some
of these people that you think, no. But they could have done.
It's amazing how
okay, I've got one more. I have one more. All right, this is Sir Clive Sinclair. Do you remember him?
Nope.
Nope.
Great car.
Great car. But he actually introduced a new 2-inch screen television set. It retailed at £175. And what year did Clive Sinclair introduce a 2-inch screen television set? Any ideas?
How long have we had TVs?
How long have we had TV? A long time. Patricia?
In the 50s?
I'll put you out your misery. It was January 1977.
Wow. That was expensive for 1977, I would have thought.
£175
is a lot of money.
But a 2-inch, I mean, just do 2 inches with your fingers. That's kind of small.
So it was much, yeah. So it was a little mini TV.
It was a 2-inch television.
Wow.
Squint.
Well, it's only like we're looking at our mobile phones now to watch.
Magnifying glass.
We can watch Netflix on our mobile phones now, can't we, though?
It's amazing, isn't it? And there you have it. This month in history.
And that was Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones.
Of course it was.
And the reason we were listening to that was, David...
Because that track is used in the new Tom Cruise Mummy film.
Right, which we're hopefully going to talk
about. The reinvention of the Mummy, which we will talk about in a mo, I think.
We will. But before then, hello, Robin. How are you?
Hello there. Good
Happy
evening.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you and to all our listeners, both of them.
Yes.
Oh, so, what have you been up to today? What's Wales like?
I've been trying to keep dry and I've been trying to keep warm. Wales in January, it is not a joke, people. It is cold here.
Yeah. I can imagine. We've been having relatively mild weather in Lincoln, actually. And,
it's not
and
been too bad.
It's not been too bad. We had a little bit of snow this morning.
But our listener in Alaska might have something to say about that, Robin, about being cold.
We
don't know what cold is.
No, we don't.
So, what will you be reviewing for us this month?
Well, I've been to see a film called Downsizing.
Okay, I've not heard of this one.
That's because it's not out in the cinemas just yet. It opens this coming Friday, January the 20th. How did I see this, you may ask?
Yes.
Well, nothing illegal. I went to an advanced screening thanks to a national cinema chain that offers early screenings to its card-carrying subscribers.
Ooh, that's lovely. Good.
See, no advertising there at all.
No, that's very good.
Downsizing, it's a hard film to gauge from its trailer. It plays as a little bit of a sci-fi movie, it's a little bit of a comedy movie, but when you sit down and enjoy the film, it's actually a completely different film to what you would expect.
Right.
It's set in the modern day, scientific advancements have brought a solution to overpopulation and our constant draining on the Earth's resources. This is called downsizing. Now, it's an elegant idea because it's a one-way, non-reversible shrinking of a person to a height of 5 inches tall.
I think I've seen a trailer for this,
Robin,
and it looks a bit like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but without Rick Moranis.
It isn't.
No, it's but that's what it kind of appears to be.
Yeah. It's the promise of a better, more prosperous future. You know, your money's going to go further because you're going to be living in a dollhouse. You know, food is going to go further. It's the absolute solution to all our problems.
Right. Except.
Yeah, the first thing I'm thinking is how dangerous it'd be to suddenly be reduced like that.
Well, no, it isn't, you see, because you're psychologically prepared, you go through the procedure, all your fillings and any steel, you know, hips or anything like that you've got have to be taken out and replaced as soon as you're miniaturized, because they can't miniaturize steel.
Right.
Matt Damon and his wife decide to take the plunge and be downsized because their money will now go so much further. They live in a little biosphere. And all should be great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a sci-fi film, and apart from the actual downsizing, that's all the sci-fi there is.
All right.
It's not about the problems of miniaturization, you know, like, I'm suddenly 5 inches tall and the cat's after me. Mm. It's not The Incredible Shrinking Man or Land of the Giants. In fact, the shrinking is just a plot device to tell an incredibly clever social satire, which reflects pretty brutally on the world we live in.
Interesting.
Because as they are, just before they go and be miniaturized, Damon and his wife go for a last meal with some friends. And of course you've got some thugs in the bar who try and pick an argument. You know, should miniaturized people have the same rights and privileges as, inverted comma, normal people?
Right.
It's an argument that's put forward early on. There's resentment. These people's money's going to go further. Should they have the right to vote? Should they have the same rights? Because they're only small. They don't contribute as much as us regular folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays very well into the kind of resentment that we hear every day.
Right.
Fascinating.
I'm not going to give away a few of the plot points. All I'm going to say is that within the dome biosphere housing the downsized, it appears that whatever your size, people will always be people. There will always be greed, avarice, social injustice, class, winners and losers.
Yeah.
It stars Matt Damon in a very strong performance, Christoph Waltz, who you may remember from an inglorious film of Quentin Tarantino's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
But the show stealer is somebody I'd never seen before, a Thai actress called Hong Chau. She plays a Vietnamese freedom fighter called Ngoc Lan Tran, and she has the best lines. She will elicit more laughs And she is basically the whole pivot of the social satire that the film is based on. I would actually give this one a solid 7.
Oh, right. Solid 7,
interesting.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. How interesting. Thank
That's
you.
Good. Well, we'll just... We'll
stay on the line, Robin. Stay with us.
We'll be right back after this.
You ought to see what they did to my mummy. Pulled his organs out of his tummy. Put them in spice. Whacked them in a jar. Painted him up with sticky tar. Wrapped them with linen from his head to his toes. Pulled his brains down in his nose. That's not all the embalmers did. They buried my mummy in a pyramid. Ancient Egypt down by the Nile. Mummy's gonna be in a tomb for a while. Fair go, Pharaoh, it's not funny. Joking tut, I want my mummy. Mummy's in a coffin of shining gold. Lying in a tomb that's dark and cold. Treasures he'll never see, 'cause he's half the mummy he used to be. Dead as a doornail, blind as a bat, with a mummified dog, a mummified cat. Don't ask me what my daddy thinks, 'cause his chariot's parked at the local Sphinx. Ancient Egypt down by the Nile. Mummy's gonna be in a tomb for a while. Fair go, Pharaoh, it's not funny. Joking top, I want my mummy. And a torch to see, were doing some archaeology. They saw a glimmer, dug some more, couldn't believe the things they saw. Ancient paintings, priceless jewels. They gave a shout and dropped their tools. But the greatest treasure they found by far was a wrinkly mummy with his guts in a jar. Ancient Egypt down by the Nile. Mummy's gonna be in a tomb for a while. Fair go, Pharaoh, it's not funny. Tell King Tut, I want my ancient Egypt down by the Nile. Mummy's gonna be in a tomb for a while. Fair go, Pharaoh, it's not funny. Tell King Tut, I want my mummy. Tell King Tut, I want my mummy. Tell King Tut, I want my mummy.
Well,
that was fun, wasn't it?
It was called The Mummy Song by Colin Buchanan, and he was nominated for an ARIA Award in 1994 for Best Children's Album for I Want My Mummy.
So there you go.
It kind of says it all, doesn't
it?
Robin, I take it you're still with us.
I am.
So, you know the theme of the show today is about mummies.
I do.
Well, I've been reading a book. Don't all be surprised. I've actually had time to be reading a book. Yes, a lovely present I got off David for Christmas. An Anne Rice and Christopher Rice sort of collaboration, that was the word. Ramesses the Damned, The Passion of Cleopatra, which is a sequel to Anne Rice's Ramesses the Damned, the mummy Ramesses the Damned, as it was called, which she wrote many, many years ago. And it's one of my favourite books of hers, actually. I absolutely love it. And so I was quite pleased to get this one. I've not finished it yet. I kind of think I know where it's going, and I've guessed a few of the plot lines along the way. But it's beautifully written. I'm not sure how much of the collaboration belongs to which party, but Christopher...
At the end of the day, as long as you can't see the joins, it doesn't...
He can't see the joins at all. And Christopher Rice, of course, is now quite established as a writer in his own right. So it's a good story, good fun.
Wasn't there an earlier mummy story from Anne Rice as well? Was it The Tale of the Body Thief? Was that a mummy?
No, that was... Well,
was that a mummy story?
Tale of the Body Thief was another one of the... I think that was another one of the Vampire Chronicles.
I can't remember.
The Body Thief. No, that's different. It was a Vampire Chronicles, and
was
that
it?
Was a different one altogether. That was where Lestat swap bodies with somebody who was alive.
So how is Aaron and Christopher dealing with this, the idea of mummies? One of the things that fascinates me about the whole mummy thing is that I suppose it's like a lot of the old Universal films, Frankenstein, Dracula. I mean, they're coming out of a great tradition, and you know, Dracula was the novel, and it was on stage. You know, Frankenstein was the novel. Mm. The Wolfman's an interesting one because that was actually sort of created for the Universal film in many respects, and so indeed was the Mummy. Mm. All coming out of the discovery of King Tut's tomb in whatever year that was. Alex probably knows what year King Tut's tomb was found.
It's in the 1920s.
1920s. Wow. There you go.
22,
so it's about 10 years or so before the actual Mummy film came out from Universal.
Well,
it fascinates me because it's a guy or a girl, Egyptian times, wrapped up in cloth and bandages, as Colin Buchanan explained, they're having your guts ripped out and put in a pot beside you, and you're basically shoved in a box in the sand.
Well, this book, or both of the books, in fact, do hark back to the time of 1920s, and then I think it's actually set in around the 1950s, because there's certainly a lot more modern things going on. I might be wrong on that.
Do they do something different? I mean, that's what I was trying to get at.
Is yes,
a lot of the Mummy films.
Yeah,
there's
a little bit of similarity into the
We just lost Robin. All right, we'll get him back. Don't worry.
Yeah, there's a little bit of similarity in this book to the Mummy that we watched, which we'll talk about later. The 1932, in the sense that Ramesses turns up and becomes part of society.
Right. So he was the Mummy.
He was the Mummy.
And he's resurrected.
He was dug out of a grave, unmarked grave, the usual thing. And he, when light hits him, he comes back alive.
Oh, right.
Because he is actually, he has been given a magic potion that gave him immortality. And this immortality gives him a lot of very unusual quirks. It's very similar in a way to, I think Anne Rice has an interest obviously in immortality because of the Vampire Chronicles, etc. Ramesses, of course, is different because he's not a vampire. He doesn't have to live off the blood of other people. Yes. However, he can consume copious amounts of food, copious amounts of alcohol, never gets drunk. He's impervious to injury in any shape or form. But he's also not evil. He's not evil in any way, but he has this amazing history which goes back with with Queen Cleopatra, who he did offer the elixir to, and she refused it.
So it is doing some things that are slightly different to the norm, which is where I was kind of trying to get at.
It is very different, but it does have, it harks back to some of those traditions as well.
I mean, we've seen some smashing mummy films, and I'm sure you have as well, Robin, you back with us over the years. I mean, I'm thinking of ones that do something slightly different, something out of the ordinary, like, for example, The Extraordinary Adventures of Adèle Blanc-Seck, which is a wonderful Luc Besson film.
That's a brilliant mummy film.
Brilliant film.
Have you seen that, Robin?
I haven't, no.
Oh.
What about you, Alex? Have you seen Adèle Blanc-Seck?
I'm a great Luc Besson fan, which is why I'm pushing Valerian and the Thousand Planets, even though it's more or less broken the French film industry. I'm still still rooting for it.
But we loved Adèle Blanc-Seck, and it's kind of a mummy film, but it's not really what it's all about. But the mummies in it are lovely. They're
superb.
They're very well done. It's very well worth seeking out if you can find it. All set in Paris, and it's a long, long story. But Adèle needs to rescue her sister, so she basically decides to resurrect one of the Egyptian pharaoh's surgeons because they have the knowledge to be able to save her sister. And so she has to figure out how to make all that happen.
But who she resurrects isn't the surgeon.
So
it's a bit of a disaster.
Gets the wrong guy, and they get it's great.
But he's very nice.
So that was a particularly good one that we liked, and we also strangely wanted to touch on the brand new film, the Tom Cruise one, The Mummy.
Yeah, have you seen that one, Robin?
I have indeed. Yeah.
Yes. And what's your thoughts on this version of The Mummy? Oh, there was a big deep sigh there.
Well, that's interesting, because Sam and I both really liked it.
It was like Mission Impossible with bandages, wouldn't it, really?
We really liked it.
I think that's what I liked about it.
What I liked about it was that it didn't just go and retread the Brendan Fraser film.
No, it didn't.
It actually tried to do something different.
Retread the Boris Karloff film.
No, and I love the Brendan Fraser films. I think they're so imaginative and clever.
They're played for laughs, though, aren't they?
Say again?
They're played for laughs.
They do have a much lighter touch.
What I enjoyed about the Karloff one was that it was a tragic love story. It was, in many ways, a remake of Dracula, which had come out the year before.
Yes. And we're going to talk about that.
The same cast.
We're going to talk about The Mummy 32-bit in a little bit later. But, you know, there have been some great Mummy films. And we were watching some trailers and stuff for things like The Mummy's Curse and The Mummy's Hand.
Yes, you know, I remember that one,
I think. Mummy's Hand I love, because that's the first of the franchise ones. Yes. When it became a series. But I tell you what's an underrated classic that you may or may not have seen is a film called The Pyramid.
Oh, we have seen that. I loved it.
Oh, like yes, we have, yeah.
Thing set inside a pyramid. It's amazing.
It's an independent film, and they've basically got, an Egyptian god trapped in a pyramid.
Yes.
That's correct,
It's a lovely film,
It's Anubis, isn't he?
Anubis, I think,
I think it's Anubis.
That's a really well-done film, That's smashing that one.
Go for Blood from the Mummies 2 with
Valerie Leon. Yes, we've got to have Valerie Leon.
I also saw, when the Brendan Fraser film came out, there was also another The Mummy film came out, which was an independent film. Do you know this
Dwayne
one?
Dwayne Johnson and The Rock. Oh, no, that's something else.
No, that's Scorpion King, isn't it?
It was somebody like... Oh, I forgot his name.
I think we've got that on DVD.
And I really liked that film, actually. Oh, I liked it.
There was one with Tony Curtis as an Egyptian priest.
That's so familiar.
One of Curtis's last films. And it was truly awful, because they're in Egypt, and they're trying to get to the mummy's tomb. Mm-hmm. And it's guarded by snakes. Now, to the best of my knowledge, I'm no zoologist. I don't think they had rattlesnakes in Egypt.
No. I think we're going to have to get on with some music now and say thank you very much, Robin. We will talk to you again next time.
Yeah, see you next month.
To you soon. Bye.
Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy. I was born 1,959 years ago. My daddy was a mummy too. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy. I don't try to scare people. I really came back to life to buy a copy of Cookie, Cookie, Lend Me Your Comb. But people run from me. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy. I wish there was somebody somewhere who wasn't afraid of me. Oh, well. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy.
That's cool.
I'm a mummy.
You mean you're a mother?
No, I'm a mummy.
I'm a beatnik.
People are afraid of me.
Yeah, I'm hip.
I was born 1,959 years ago.
Oh, yeah? Like, that's a long gig.
Where can I buy a copy of Cookie, Cookie, Lend Me Your Comb?
Ooh, man, I don't dig that jazz. You know, Brubeck, Shearing, Modern Jazz Quartet.
I'm a mummy.
Man, you gotta walk through.
Aren't you afraid of me? Aren't you gonna scream?
Oh, yeah. Like help.
The Midweek Drive on Siren FM 107.3.
Are you there?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
This is who we are.
Coffee House Hermits from Lincoln, England. We're all travellers in space and time.
With strange characters.
And it's the one with the nose.
I absolutely love her.
And surprises galore.
A free concert. Think of it as being sung to by Elvis Presley.
Unusual discussion topics.
Why would you want to give every child a water pistol? It was a bit like choosing between kittens and babies.
That will make your ribs soul.
You have really done your homework.
That's what we call show business.
Join the Midweek Drive team every Wednesday from 5 till 7 on Siren FM 107.3.
Hi, I'm Jim Broadbent. You're listening to Siren Radio 107.3 FM.
And that craziness was called The Mummy by Bob McFadden and Dore. And it was taken from the album, a 1959 LP, Songs Our Mummy Taught Us. Bob McFadden was a voiceover artist as well, most famous for his contribution to animated cartoons, including Snarf, the cat in Thundercats. Did you know that?
Oh, yes.
Dore is Rod McEwan, a best-selling American poet in the 1960s as well.
There you are, so that was a bit of nonsense.
That was a bit of nonsense, but from some pretty cool people. So, welcome to the show again, Joshua Lee Friedman.
Speaking of pretty cool people.
Yes. Josh, welcome. I think we need to give you a round of applause because we've really missed you.
Yay.
Hi, welcome back.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. You've been so busy. Is there anything you could tell us that you've been up to lately?
So we're talking mummies, actually, this time, Josh. We've been discussing some mummy films, and so we've had some mummy songs. So have you had any mummy happenings?
I was listening. No, I will give you a mummy cocktail, though.
Oh, sounds good to me. I've got my pen ready.
That works for you.
Okay.
But no, as far as film happenings, as I might have intimated, I just wrapped a film 4 hours ago.
Wow.
What can you tell us about it?
I'm allowed to say quite a lot because the only gag order on this was the imagery of this film because it's a science fiction film about a killer. It's a killer robot movie.
Oh, wow.
And
sounds
so
good.
Long as, so they said completely talk about it because the only thing that's a secret is what our robot looks like.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
We just wrapped. We've been shooting since the turn of the new year. We started on January 3rd, and we've been shooting nights for the past 2 weeks. And we just wrapped.
Wow. So your world is all topsy-turvy then, I take it.
Yeah. In fact, I don't want to miss the show, so I just we went over. We were supposed to be done a while ago, but we went over, so I stayed up to be on your show.
Oh, bless you. We're very grateful for that.
So who's stars in the film? Who have they got headlining it?
We have a lot of people from the horror community, a lot of people I've worked with before, a lot of refugees from that horror film. We did Tales of Halloween.
Oh, yes.
Last 2 years back. So we took, Graham Skipper, who also played Herbert West in Reanimator. And Alyssa Dowling from many horror films, and Sadie Katz, and another horror starlet. Her name is Sarah French, a wonderful actress.
Fantastic.
And Jeff Richter from Star Trek Next Generation.
Wow.
Anyway, but basically, it's we just basically shot Office Space meets Saturn III. if anyone remembers Saturn III, the killer robot film from the 80s. Or Short Circuit. It's very much like a film about office workers who are being replaced by, it's 5 minutes in the future. A future just short of a close away, and all these office workers are going to be replaced by automotive, by robots, and they have a problem with that, and however the prototype runs amok and starts killing the employees who give the
kind of
problems. Yeah.
A bit of a RoboCop vibe as well.
Or even Terminator.
Yeah.
It's funny to say that even though the imagery of it was all practical. Our robot was practical.
Yeah.
It was a guy in a suit, but the suit was amazing. It definitely looks like a cross between, I would say, RoboCop and, if you're watching The Orville, the character of Isaac. It came out very, we're very surprised. We did a lot of practical effects and we had amazing sets and amazing actors. And it's a first time director who cuts trailers for Lionsgate. And his name is Gato Satian. And an amazing editor. Everyone trusts them with their trailers.
Yes.
So, this is a guy who knows how to edit.
He's got a very good eye for the shots.
Amazing. And he knew what he wanted. And it was a labor of love, and 2 weeks of nights to kick off the year.
Wow!
So what's the film called, Josh, so that we can look out for it?
Yes, it's called Automation.
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 Yes.
Fantastic.
Automation.
That might change before release, but yeah, fantastic.
That's brilliant.
That sounds excellent, doesn't it?
You always trouble me for a cocktail.
I do. Yes. Yes. Not that I'm an alcoholic or anything.
This is what I knew the show was about mummies, so I made sure I had something ready for you.
Great.
This is basically if you in the cocktail corner, if you take your take a mix of Malibu rum,
and
vanilla vodka, one part Malibu rum, one part vanilla vodka, and a dash of Frangelico, which is a hazelnut liqueur.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
And a splash of half and half, and you mix it up and strain it. You now have yourself what I call the rummy mummy.
Half and half is milk, of
rummy
course.
Rummy mummy. Ooh, I like
it's
it.
Half and half is half mummy. Milk. Yeah, half and half is half milk, half water?
Yeah, it's a cream, but it's all you cream. Do is it's just a splash of cream.
Right, so it's cream. Cream. So it's just single cream then, basically.
So a splash
and
of single cream.
And you shake it up because it mixes well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it mixes well with the hazelnut, the vanilla vodka, and, of course, the Malibu rum.
Sounds fascinating.
So it has a very sweet taste to it.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, once you mix it up, you have yourself the rummy mummy.
Rummy mummy.
That sounds amazing.
Is that enough to put you in the ground?
he just had to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will embalm your organs.
The inside out.
Oh, Josh, hang on a moment, because we're going to walk like an Egyptian, but we'll be coming back to you. That was the Bangles.
Yes.
Are you still with us, Josh?
Susanna Hoff's trying to get out of that locked cupboard.
Well, it's now time for David's Film of the Month, so hang about and we can all have a chat about The Mummy.
Fantastic, because we're going to talk about the original The Mummy, 1932. And I know you've seen this one, Josh.
Of course, I'm a huge fan.
Probably, absolutely huge fan. So, The Mummy, 1932... American pre-code horror film directed by Carl Freund. It's got an interesting background. We kind of touched on this earlier in the show. I know you weren't on, Josh, but we touched on it in the show, in that it was kind of an original idea, like the Wolfman was kind of almost invented for the film. And I've done a little bit of research, a little bit of digging here, and I can see that the producer
commissioned Richard Shayer, the story editor, to find a novel that he could use as the basis for an Egyptian-themed horror film, just as they'd used Dracula and Frankenstein. But he couldn't find one. But he did find a short story by Arthur Conan Doyle entitled The Ring of Thoth. And Shayer and another writer learned about another guy called Alessandro Caligrostro. Caligostro, which was the original title for The Mummy. And that story was about a 3,000-year-old magician who survives by injecting himself with nitrates. This eventually developed into moving it to Egypt, and it became The Mummy. So it's a fascinating story. As we said, it's not really a horror film. It's like a love story. Boris Karloff, frankly, is incredible. But, of course, you only see him as an actual mummified mummy in about three shots in the first kind of 2 minutes or so of the film. And they make a lot of the facts that they...
It
looks incredible, Josh. He's amazing.
Obviously, his skin looks very, very wrinkly, yes. And so...
But they were explaining on one of the documentaries that Jack Pierce made up Boris Karloff full figure for these... And then they didn't even use it. They didn't even use shots of the full mummy moving in the film, which was incredible. But most of the film, Karloff is playing a character called Ardat Bey, who's this sort of regal Egyptian who's interested
Hotep.
And he's Imhotep, yeah.
Imhotep, sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's trying to get back his Egyptian queen, who's been reincarnated in this the other character in the film, played by Zita Johan, playing Helen Grosvenor. And basically the story is her sort of realising who she is, realising what her background is, what her heritage is, and effectively sort of re-falling in love with Ardat Bey, played by Boris Karloff. While the other male leads, David Mann as Arthur Byron, Edwin Bad Sloan, Bramwell Fletcher, they kind of thrash around, run around a lot, not knowing quite what's going on, looking at strolls, trying to make sense of it all.
But Eddie Van Sloan playing Dr. Muller is also the guy who also plays Van Helsing.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
In Frankenstein, so this guy was like the original superhero for the Universal.
He was indeed. And he's got a lovely cast, and all of the characters are very well cast and very well played. We watched it last night again. We've actually got the upgraded, cleaned-up Blu-ray edition they released a couple of years back now, which is a smashing print of it. It's really clean. It's good to watch. And if you haven't seen any of these Universal films on the Blu-ray edition, it's well worth finding it because, you know, the quality makes such a difference to the enjoyment of the films, I find. Do you find that as well, Josh?
What would you give it out?
Not only do I enjoy the Blu-rays, but one of my favorite bits about enjoying The Mummy, revisiting it now, is that if you're a fan of Todd Browning's Dracula, you'll notice that they use the same public domain music to open the film.
They do indeed, yes.
Yes, Swan Lake.
It's quite funny, Swan Lake.
It is. It's Swan Lake for Dracula and The Mummy. And I think, you know, Carl Freund will it work for when I... Because Carl Freund also shot Dracula for Todd Browning.
Right.
So it was like, if it worked for Todd... It'll work for me.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
But it's a great film.
Very true.
It doesn't outstay its welcome as well. It's not very long. I think it's tremendous.
It's an hour and 13 minutes.
Hour and 13. And I think if you've got any interest in the kind of the history of mummy films, it's well worth
it. It's definitely worth seeing it.
We were just talking as well, I think we've got a little bit of time, haven't we? About a few other mummy films that we were remembering.
Baba Hotep is one of our favourites, some more comedy ones. Have you seen Baba Hotep? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, of course. How do you not love that? You put Bruce Campbell in anything, and you have a great film.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
Bruce is
just
tremendous
brilliant.
In that one.
And we were also talking about Christopher Lee's Mummy. And to be honest, looking at the 1932 version made me realise where... Because Brendan Fraser's version, I always just took it as it was just a completely original story. But the elements were all there from the original.
The same story.
Yeah, except played more for laughs.
Played more for laughs and modern technologies and stuff like that.
modern CGI on the monster. Although I have to say, Arnold Vosloo is a brilliant mummy.
Yeah.
I think he's brilliant.
Yes, he is fantastic.
He's quite good. I thought the movies degenerated as they went on.
But, yes, they did, yeah.
You know, it was a nice run. I mean, it was a nice run to bring back to keep the franchise alive. I don't know if you spoke of the Tom Cruise, I'm sure you have.
Yeah, tell us what you think, Josh, yeah.
What do you think of the Tom Cruise one?
I hate when I'm watching a film, I hate trying to like a film as I'm watching it. Because I knew it was a launch pad for the Dark Universe initiative for Universal Studios to start a franchise of monsters, hence Dr. Jekyll's appearance and performance. And they were starting a whole thing, but it didn't quite work in the box office. Mm. And so it was like a bad, I think, I felt bad. I kind of enjoyed the film to a degree, and then it lost me. Because it was ramming a franchise down my throat rather than telling me a great story.
Interesting.
Right. See, we didn't see it that way, because we weren't aware of this franchise
thing. We really enjoyed it.
We just took it on face value. Which is really interesting. Anyway, that's all we've got time for.
Oh, no.
But thank you, Josh. Great to have you back.
I'm going to shamble off into the swamp
yes.
and slowly disappear beneath the surface.
So, say goodnight, David J. Howe.
Goodnight, David J. Howe.
Night, Joshua. You, Lou Friedman. Alex Lefchuk.
Good night.
Big thanks to Patricia H. Ash and Robin Pierce as well. And we'll see you next
time. Who have you been?
Oh, I'm Sam Stone. Too late.